It's our time for our weekly check-in on the latest political news from Washington, D.C. While the government shutdown has been temporarily suspended and federal employees are back to work, lawmakers have a February 15th deadline to find money for border security, or else we could see the government shut down once again. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi extended an invitation to President Trump this week to deliver the State of the Union after canceling the address, citing security concerns during the shutdown. And we're also seeing a growing field of Democratic and independent candidates throw their hat into the ring for the 2020 presidential race. And our question for you this week is, which candidates are you watching and who do you hope runs? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll tackle that question in just a bit. But first, our guest this week is Ginger Gibson. She's a political correspondent at Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back, Darrell. Nice to be on with you.
Nice to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes. Today was the first day that lawmakers began negotiating funding for border security, which, as a reminder, was the primary reason the government was shut down for the last month. Are lawmakers feeling the pressure to reach an agreement to head off another shutdown?
The clock is ticking for lawmakers. But like legislative processes, it can only move so fast. The first meeting was held today. This is a bicameral, bipartisan meeting, so members of the House, the Senate, Republicans, and Democrats, and they did what politicians do best. They read speeches. Everyone was giving their opening remarks today, what they hope to see accomplished. But it's not really any of the nitty-gritty of deal-making. We did get some preview of where everyone stands, and a suggestion that Nita Lowey, the top Democrat in the House portion, is putting together a preliminary offer, something from which they could start negotiating.
I'll start with Republicans first. What's going to be on the table for them as they negotiate?
This one's tough because we have to look at this as essentially two different ideologies all on the Republican side. First off, there are the Trump-aligned portions, and we saw that it took several lawmakers speaking until we got to one that mentioned a wall, who then said, actually, it could be some type of structure. But the president has insisted he wanted a wall. He seems to be backing down off of that. But the Republican Party at large, the rest of his party, has been quite open to more comprehensive adjustments and changes to the immigration law, some of them which might not be entirely consistent with the president's ideology. So the Republicans almost have two factions in this process, ones that are going to be pushing for a much more hardline approach to immigration and others that might be open to things like DACA, pathways to citizenship to those already in the country illegally, and other provisions that have been in previous comprehensive immigration reforms.
Well, you talked about the Republicans and how they're split into two different camps. What are Democrats hoping to get out of this negotiation process?
Democrats, first and foremost, don't want to see the government closed again after the deadline on the 15th. But they're not willing to give up money for a wall. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made clear as they were in the process of reopening the government that they aren't going to fund a wall. They would, however, fund a good deal of other border security. And here's the thing that's really fascinating about this. You could see a very high-tech, high-scale, near militarization of the border. Things that Democrats are saying, like drones and sensors, that they might not have supported in another situation. But to reach some kind of compromise and to not allow a wall to be built, they are starting to, and not just starting, they have flatly said they would support some of those additions.
Now, lawmakers really only have 3 weeks to put together a plan that the president will sign off on. Is there a sense of urgency on Capitol Hill?
There is a sense of urgency. There is a desire to at least figure out if they can come to a deal and figure out if that's going to be the path to reaching a funding agreement in the next 3 weeks or if they're going to have to start over from scratch to try to avoid another government shutdown.
Speaking from the Rose Garden last Friday, President Trump had this to say.
If we don't get a fair deal from Congress, the government will either shut down on February 15th again, or I will use the powers afforded to me under the laws and the Constitution of the United States to address this emergency.
Now, the president is indicating that he could declare a state of emergency. Do we have a sense or an indication of how serious he is about doing this?
I think we can assume that the president is very serious about this, and that is why he continues to point to it as an option. But we should also understand that members of his own party are very opposed to taking this step. It would be an unprecedented use of power, and it would fly in the face of many of their criticism of the previous president, and they realize that. They're also worried that it would set a new precedent that could allow future Democratic presidents and Congresses to do things that they wouldn't want done under the auspice that it was an emergency. And for that reason, I think behind closed doors, the president is receiving a lot of pushback, even from his own allies in Congress, that he doesn't move forward with that decision.
So what will you be watching for over the next few weeks as negotiations continue?
The big things to watch for is if they start to settle on pieces. A lot of times when members of Congress sit down to negotiate big policy positions, they work incrementally. They'll come to an agreement that they think they can get 70% or 60% of their membership on board with one provision, and then they'll move on to the next. If you don't start to see those incremental accomplishments, headlines that say they agree on pieces of a deal, that won't be a good sign that they'll be able to reach any deal in the next 3 weeks.
Ginger Gibson is our guest. She's a political correspondent at Reuters, and we're talking about the news of the week, the political news of the week in Washington, D.C. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi extended an invitation to President Trump to deliver the State of the Union address from the House. She originally rescinded the invitation during the shutdown, citing security concerns. Now, the shutdown is over for now. Is the shift a surprise from Pelosi, or was this expected?
This was expected. We saw the first withdrawal of the invitation really as Nancy Pelosi not wanting the president to come into her chamber and criticize her members for not giving him a wall on her invitation. Now that the government is open, tradition would dictate that she's not got much grounds. It is true that this will come right in the middle of this period in which the government could turn around and be shut again in a few weeks, but hard to justify not reaching a date as something that is so traditional as a State of the Union address.
Yeah, there was some speculation that opposing parties could disinvite a president from delivering the State of the Union address in the future as a political move, which some said Pelosi was doing when she first rescinded the invitation. Do you think Pelosi was able to do some potential damage control with this?
Pelosi was trying to show that she was willing to hear from the president, just not willing to do so on those exact terms. There was, of course, criticism from both sides, but I think a little bit of what we see, especially in a situation like a government shutdown, is if you're inclined to be critical of Nancy Pelosi, you're going to think the move was terrible. If you're inclined to think that she's great and a wonderful leader, you're going to think that the move was reasonable. A lot of this is confirmation bias. You know, people are going to just assume one way or another based on what they already think about these people.
And as much as you can guess, what do you think the president will focus the most on when he delivers the State of the Union on February 5th?
You know, State of the Union addresses have traditionally been an opportunity for a president to lay out their policy agenda, to really get in the weeds about policies they would like to see enacted in the next year. President Trump has two sort of challenges in front of him. The first off, his party doesn't control one chamber anymore. So things that he might have said had they continued to control the House probably won't hear as much about that as we would have otherwise. Additionally, the president is just not a wonky policy guy. This really isn't his forte. And so giving a long policy address is often not something the president feels inclined to do. And for that reason, we might hear a little less policy. Really, the president is about messaging, is about broad messaging. And it will not be lost on him that it's 3 weeks until the government could shut down again. So expect to hear a real full-throated defense of his positions on the wall and what he wants to see Congress do between now and that 15th deadline.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson right now. She's a political correspondent at Reuters and is with us to talk about all things political going on in Washington, D.C. Coming up after the break, the field of candidates in the 2020 presidential election is growing. So our question for you this week is, which candidates are you watching and who do you hope runs? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll tackle that question next. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner. Right now, we continue our conversation about national politics with Ginger Gibson. She's a political correspondent at Reuters. Among the biggest political news over the last week is that there is a presidential election on the horizon, and Democrats and independent hopefuls have already started announcing they'll run for the White House. So our question for you today is, what candidates are already making an impression on you? And who would you like to see run in 2020? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's go to the 2020 candidate field. It may be only January, but a number of presidential hopefuls have either announced that they're planning on running for president or they have established exploratory committees. Before we get to the potential candidates themselves, is it normal, Ginger, to see this much interest at this point in the election cycle?
Seeing a lot of interest early, that is unusual. Part of this is the fact that we have Democrats running this time and not Republicans. If you may recall, 4 years ago when a lot of Republicans were running, there were Democrats, but just far fewer of them. They held off on announcing their campaigns so that they could fundraise for their super PACs. This was a trend started by Jeb Bush. Democrats are eschewing super PACs and corporate donations, so they aren't going to take the time to do that fundraising. And because they're eschewing that corporate money, they have to spend more time raising it. I think that's why we see so many of them getting in so early, so that they can try to round up that cash that they're going to need a year from now when they start running really expensive television ads.
Now, so far for the Democrats, former HUD Secretary Julian Castro, former Maryland Representative John Delaney, Hawaii Representative Tulsi Gabbard, and California Senator Kamala Harris have all announced that they're running. Those are some pretty well-known politicians. Why do you think that candidates are eager to get their names out there now as opposed to a little later?
If you look at the polling, you'll see that name recognition, especially at this point, is one of the most critical elements of a candidacy. Vice President Joe Biden, who has not made a decision about running, leads the pack overwhelmingly in polls, and really that's because people know his name. And so these candidates need to get their names out there so that they can start to register in these polls. And registering the polls is going to be really important. That's the proof that they take to donors to try to get them to give money. And it's also going to be potentially part of the way in which they get included in debates that begin this summer between the candidates.
Now, you spoke about former Vice President Joe Biden, that there's a possibility that he'll challenge President Trump. And he hasn't said anything official, but some polling indicates that he would have support, as you mentioned, from a number of voters. What would a Biden campaign look like against a Trump reelection bid?
I mean, to be clear, Biden leads in all of these primary polls because he's well-known. If he got in the race, he would still have to run what would be a very difficult race and beat some very serious challengers, and he's no guarantee to get the nomination. But I think if we saw a matchup between Vice President Joe Biden and President Trump, there would be some interesting exchanging of verbal spats between the two of them. They are both not ones to mince their words. And I think we would see Biden making the case that he could return the White House to normalcy, that he already knows how the institution works, that he wouldn't have to learn on the job, and that he could correct some of the chaos that has been created by President Trump.
Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz made some waves by announcing that he's planning on running as an independent. And we heard already that there was a concern, at least from a few folks, who, including one person who raised their concern very loudly about Schultz running. How concerned are people that Schultz could split the field of candidates?
There is clearly a lot of concern in Democratic quarters that a well-funded, i.e. a rich person running as an independent, would create a lot of problems for Democrats. They're worried that Trump's base is just so loyal that they are only going to vote for him, but that the rest of the voters could be divided. Voters that might have otherwise gone to a Democrat, but instead would go to Schultz. I mean, I think it's clear, and Schultz has said so himself, that looking at the Democratic primary, he just didn't see a route to victory there. He didn't think he could win. I will be surprised if he finds much of a route to victory as an independent. That is a big hill to climb. It is a very daunting task, given the way our system is structured. And so it may be that he doesn't run, but if he does, he's going to have to contend with a lot of Democratic criticism about that decision.
Could we see any serious Republican challengers to President Trump?
That remains to be seen. We saw the announcement yesterday from Arizona Senator Jeff Flake that he would not challenge the president. He had made comments before to reporters that he would challenge the president if another Republican didn't emerge. There was speculation that either he had abandoned that or maybe knew something the rest of us didn't. To be clear, the polls show that the president has a solid base of support within his party. His administration, his political people, his campaign have made sure that the RNC, the Republican National Party, is all in line with him. So there isn't a lot of holes there to try to punch through a good base of support.
Now, there's a lot to look at as the 2020 election shapes up. We'll continue this conversation tomorrow and take your calls. Until then, you can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at CentralTimeWPR. Now, I want to shift the focus to some U.S. foreign relations news. White House National Security Advisor John Bolton raised some eyebrows last week when his notes were fully displayed on camera saying 5,000 troops to Colombia. Now, this came on the heels of some political trouble brewing in neighboring Venezuela, leading to speculation that the United States military might get involved in Central America. What have some people been saying in Washington, D.C. about this?
That moment with the notebook has our notepad has raised more questions than it has provided answers. There's still a lot of open questions about what exactly he meant, whether or not this is a strategy we just got a peek into, whether or not this was underway already or an idea someone had floated, why he would have walked into a nationally televised briefing with that on his notebook, regardless of the reason. But we haven't gotten answers to those things. What we have gotten is a little bit of pushback from Democrats in Congress, including some that were tweeting their responses by having pictures of them carrying notepads. We saw one House member who said that the president doesn't have the authority to do that, another who reminded the president he would need to go to Congress to get permission, reference to checks and balances. Really, that moment with the notepad was more confusing than it was illuminating at this point.
Well, obviously, this is still developing, but what will you be watching for over the next few weeks?
On this front, I would be watching for how the U.S. is handling the situation in Venezuela in general, whether or not we see additional remarks after the initial recognition of the new government, and what conversations are taking place between top-level administration officials like Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and the members of Congress. They would need Congress's help to do something like that. And so we know in the past when administrations are trying to get Congress on board, we'll start seeing more briefings, we'll start seeing more discussions, they'll start trying to up their level of understanding about the issue in anticipation of possibly needing them to vote.
Now, I want to switch really quickly to the Mueller investigation. We just have about a minute left, but speculation has been rampant since it began, but Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker announced that the probe is coming to a close. But what has been the reaction to the news in Washington?
We are all waiting on pins and needles to see if we're going to get a report out of Mueller. He filed charges against Roger Stone, which means at least the prosecutorial process isn't close to coming to a close. But I think there'll be a lot of people here who are just waiting to read that report whenever they get it.
What are you on the lookout for?
Would be on the lookout for dismantling of his team or some type of movement to file papers. Also remember that we're going to get a new AG here pretty soon, AG Barr. Any changes or announcements he might make would be illuminating as well.
Ginger, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Stay warm. We're all sending warm thoughts your way.
Thank you so much. You take care. Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent at Reuters. She joined us to talk about the latest political news happening at the nation's capital. Tune in tomorrow at 4:30 to hear more about the Democratic and independent candidates for the 2020 presidential race. We will be talking about that tomorrow at 4:30 right here on Central Time. You can also you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. You can email us. You can log on to our Facebook page. Tell us who you're excited about possibly running for president.